reflecting the love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, throw open the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gashami, Dukyampi, Katyampi, Saha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam, Saranam, Gashami. Dukyampi, Katyampi, Saha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam, Saranam, Gashami. Dukyampi, Katyampi, Saha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajñam paramita hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion. By compassionate aspiration that harms no one. By compassionate speech that makes for clarity. By compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret. By compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. By compassionate endeavor that results in goodness. By compassionate mindfulness that proves its path. By compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint in religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhamma. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pleasures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings, dutyampi tatyampi sapa, again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face a new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here at His suffering. If His suffering is more important than anything, we will end in suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end the suffering. What should we look at this morning? Scott.
Well, I'd like some assistance with something that's going on. And I think what I'm practicing is talking about what's going on for me rather than being in a conversation ahead about what's going on with me.
So practicing talking about what's going on rather than being caught up in the conversation, having a conversation in the head.
So the content is... Just briefly, when I was sick, I couldn't write my letters home like normal. Mm-hmm. So I had the monastery just send a message to my family that they would be delayed. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things happened. They didn't react very well to that. That made them feel almost like more like, well, what's going on? And why didn't you call directly? And so then my mom called and, are you okay? And that kind of, mm-hmm. And that's not part of the normal way we communicate, but she called and left a message, so I got guidance and sent her a text and said, I'm fine, I'm actually on the mend, you know, mm-hmm. I can appreciate your position being a mom and not having a lot of contact with me. And then it took me a while to get better, and then by the time I got better, I wrote the letter, and then the mail didn't go out 1 week, and so anyway, there was another couple of weeks where they didn't get the letter, and so then my mom called again, and it was just, I'm concerned and that kind of thing. And so I wrote her back and I had to go through the guest master this time mm-hmm. because I didn't want to set up a dynamic of her going back and forth because that's not how we usually communicate. Mm-hmm. And then she got the letter the next day and she called me again and said, okay, I got the letter. Okay, you know. And then that same day or the next day I got a voicemail from my brother who was really upset with me because apparently my mom took the last email I sent to her as if I was saying she wasn't following the agreement to not be calling me. Mm-hmm. Where I was mm-hmm. just saying, I'm sending this to the guest master so that I can keep in integrity. Okay. So his whole thing was, your mom's crying and you're being really unkind mm-hmm. and I mean, isn't that what your practice is? Do no harm and you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So all of that, that last part actually with my brother is what's kind of set off this karmic mm-hmm. Stuff. And what's the suffering, it seems like, is, and it's very familiar, but just repeating, having imaginary conversations, waking up into imaginary conversations with my brother and my family.
Okay, just to make sure I'm with you. So you have a certain agreement as part of monastic training to have a particular communication with family members and that happened at a particular time. And due to illness, you weren't able to write or call at the time it had been agreed upon. And that what happened is that another form of communication was set up through the monastery to get in touch with family members. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because it was your mom reacted in a way that she started calling directly, because out of her concern. Then it just kind of escalated.
It just kind of escalated. Exactly.
And then what happened is then a whole lot of stories got made up. It sounds like from family members about what was going on, and then there was this kind of lashing out to you about you being responsible for
family members'
reactions.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's kind of the in the head thing of like, gosh, I can sympathize. And so it's been almost a week, and it continues to go on every day, kind of more or less, but essentially. It feels obsessive.
So to clarify, what continues to go on is the internal conversation.
No more external conversations or voicemails from people. But I mean, after you just get to see where all this lives.
Yeah.
I'm not actually talking to anybody anymore. Mm-hmm. I didn't respond to that last. There is no person here to talk to. There's no family member to talk to at all.
It's all internal.
And again, it's familiar, it somehow it gets turned into some kind of rejection of me, not understanding what I'm doing here, not approving, not supporting, and so then I've got to defend myself.
Uh-huh.
But that goes on, like a little machine,
yeah.
And it feels like it just gets running, and I can do practices, I can break it up, and a massive gift yesterday of our job essentially was to meditate. And I got a huge relief from that. And then, I go to sleep for 2 hours and I wake up with this energy, and then I wake up into that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And, then I get up this morning and it's going, and then I do this thing, and it seems like, and then it's going again.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I have zero control over it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel trying to get rid of it and stop it, and that just almost makes me more anxious.
Yeah.
And then I try to bring the humor, and then I try to do the two-handed recording, and it just seems like what gets missed is in the two-handed recording, I can't get to a place of it keeps getting interrupted, what's going on for this person. Like as soon as I start to talk about it, that's ego. There's a slight disidentification, that's ego. Well, that's a conversation in the head. Well, everyone, you're having the same issue. There's just constant judgment. It interrupts just the process of somebody saying what's going on for them.
Yes, and you started this morning by saying that you would like to talk in group about what is authentically going on rather than having a conversation in the head, and what you're just describing is that same sort of process going on with the recorder. There's an attempt to talk about what's going on authentically, and it's interrupted.
Yeah.
By that, again, that internal conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can feel it now.
Uh-huh.
Actually trying to interrupt me now.
Uh-huh.
Well, you're not really talking about your experience now, are you?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I can feel this, I feel like I give up.
Okay. So there's this constant, one might say, battery, that's going on. You're not talking, And so then someone just gives up.
Yeah. Which maybe, I don't know, maybe that could be helpful. I'm going to stop trying to get away from this or control this.
Mm-hmm.
But it also feels like I'll just go on doing the best I can, but essentially taking the beatings.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I can feel this, ego. I can feel this sort of, something. Ego is just totally fine with this.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing with my feet hurting and stuff like that. It's just that's just such a familiar thing, suffering.
Uh-huh.
But again, it's like that right there feels like another little diversion from what's going on for you.
Yeah, so I keep getting diverted. There keeps being this diversion about for what's really going on. You know, you're just seeing that ego still getting fed. It would seem like you're actually talking about what's going on or wanting to talk about what's going on, and still just it's not happening.
Yeah, it feels like what we talk about, there's like a person at the bottom of the well, and the only thing that's being heard is the thing at the top of the well. You know, or it's like the thing that's, it's the survival identity talking, but not the person who actually anything's happening to.
You can really see it's the identity talking, not the authentic, not the person that's really at the bottom of the well.
So then it feels like I can't really access that compassion. And you know, so just, yeah, which I know from experience is kind of what ends that self-hatred.
Do you have a sense of what that person at the bottom of the well might want to say?
Hear like like kind of a couple things. Like I can hear I hate this. I can hear I could use some help here. I can hear like over here. I'm over here.
You hear someone that is asking for help.
He doesn't care about explaining it or having or figuring it out or articulating it or doesn't want to get involved in that. Doesn't have anything to do with, like, why are you doing that? I don't know. I don't know.
Doesn't want to have to explain or, yeah, it just is asking for help.
Yeah, I mean, feels like, gosh, could we use somebody a little wiser and, you know, older, like I could use, you know, like a mentor.
Yeah, yeah. I could use a mentor. I could use some wisdom.
Someone who doesn't get caught up in all of this and all the coping.
Someone who's not caught up in the coping, the continual type of conversation.
And it just seems like clear, like just, it just seems so clear to everyone, including Scott, just wants to be in love. Doesn't, just in a very, very simple way.
Very simple way. It's so clear that there's just a wanting to be in love without all of the conversation, without all the diversion, without all the explaining, without any of that.
Yeah, or trying to get love.
Not trying to get love.
Yeah, there's something much more basic than any of that hoopla, you know. And it feels like that, when I say that simple, it feels like that is just the base of life. And there's just all this piled on stuff on top, and all these distractions, and all this coping, and all this hatred, and it's just like, oh, you know, gosh.
So there's a real sense, and it sounds like a real experience of what's real, that love, and then there's the scene of all that stuff that just, it gets piled on top of it.
I guess it's the sense too of like, and it's all okay.
It's all okay.
You know, it's like no one's fault or
you get a sense of the okayness of it, of the, it's no one's fault, maybe even the whole process is okay. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are two things that came up to talk about, and I thought they were unrelated, but I think they're related.
Okay.
So, this past week with the weather, a whole bunch of things on my calendar were canceled.
The weather canceled, interrupted a lot of plans.
And so, I had these 4 days, Wednesday through Saturday, that were pretty empty, mm-hmm. which I always think is the ideal. And I was all excited about these days. And then they turned out not like I anticipated. I didn't feel the way I expected to feel, and I filled them with things that I think I would not prefer to fill them with sometimes. And so I ended up yesterday evening feeling kind of disappointed. And I thought, oh, this is so familiar. So familiar. It's such a setup. And so, first of all, I mean, I just got a day is simply a day, you know? It's just a day. Whatever happens is just a day. And on Friday in class, in my Zen class, something happened that I think is actually a metaphor for an alternative way.
An alternative way.
Yeah. So our trainer has us doing this thing that on Friday we do this class called Circuit, where we go from thing to thing for a minute and a half. And so she's got this rope that weighs about 10 tons, and you hold either end of it. It's really long. It's about 15 feet, and then you flip it up like this, and then you do it alternately like this. And sorry about the recorder, but anyway, it's like this. And it's my least favorite thing. I really hated it a lot. And what I realized, and then it's because it's, you know, it's a huge effort to pull it. It weighs a lot. And on Friday, with no intention to do this, what happened was I started making the motion from my ankles, and it went right up through my torso and my arms and out the rope.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all I got. It's all one motion.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't making the rope do this. You know what I mean? It just happened that all of a sudden it was just a ripple.
Mm-hmm.
And it was way easier.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And and I also got how natural it felt, and it was no, like, the rope was no longer my enemy. We were doing this together.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be good to live that way.
Yeah.
And then I could have the same relationship to a day.
Oh, wow. So you had this experience. Thank goodness, but, you know, in exercise classes, just this aha moment where this thing has, it sounds like there had been some, had kind of been an adversarial relationship.
I got to make it do it. It doesn't want to do it.
It's so heavy, and the teacher's making, you know, this is a part of the circuit training. And just to have this breakthrough where the whole motion just came from the ankles up.
Right.
And through the arms and it was just one continuous motion.
Yeah, it was quite remarkable.
Quite remarkable.
It was kind of poetic, actually.
Yeah. And just seeing how that could be, what a great metaphor.
Yeah.
For even, you know, you don't have to be in a, have an adversarial relationship with the contents of the day.
Or anything.
Or
probably.
Anything.
Yeah.
It could just be part of the rhythm of life and just one continuous motion.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yes. I think that's all I have to say.
Okay, so those are the two things.
Yeah.
Having the 4 days of unstructured time,
right.
Which seemed like something that was just like, wow,
mm-hmm.
just what I always wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then to find out that, you know, maybe it wasn't exactly what you wanted.
Well, thank you for remaking that connection, because I think what happens is, I think when I have a day like that, that it's going to have that effortless feel.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And then I do things that where it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I'm aware of some of those things I do, like check the computer too often and that kind of thing. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I start. I think I also have an attitude that's similar to the rope, that even though I look forward to not the rope but the day, that somehow I have to, I'm going to make it do something, you know, and it's going to be heavy lifting. And actually, all those days, if I, as any day, were available for just that, that sort of ripple. And what happened with the rope was, you know, I have an expectation about what the rope's going to be based on my experience, and then I had a whole different experience. And so the expectation was not helpful. And I was, it was one of those moments of grace of just breaking through the expectation. So that kind of graceful relationship to anything is, I think, probably quite possible.
Quite possible. I love that. But you said that graceful ripple versus heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And to just really...
It really sounds different.
Yeah. To just have that experience of graceful ripple and to see how that could be applied in...
Everywhere. Let's put that above my workstation. Graceful ripple.
Graceful.
Thank you. June.
So I have a practice of revealing thought patterns and things that go, that I hear really often. So 2018 is going to be the year of love for June.
2018 is, I just want to say that, 2018 is going to be the year of love for June.
Yeah. And so I've become aware of kind of a thought pattern that is doing its best to be an impediment to that.
Yeah.
And I've been recording about it and looking at it. And in my experience, saying it out loud in group is yet another practice of taking its power. Mm-hmm. And I'm scrambling to remember it, in fact. I think it's hiding.
Okay, so this conversation that wants to snatch that commitment or to divert the attention from that commitment of being 2018 being the year of love for June, suddenly it's kind of a little bit slippery to reveal.
So, okay. And I've been, I guess, reminded of a number of things that I love or have loved and haven't been doing at all. I would call them practices at this point. In my younger life, they were anything from just hobbies to lifelines. Mm-hmm. And and so what goes is just three or four things that I can feel excitement about. And what happens in this mental egoic karmic system is a constant story of it's too late now, you're too old. And
So this is number of things that are just, and you know, just love to do, and yet there you hear this constant little meaning that it's too late, too late for you to engage in those things.
And I heard the guide say, we don't want to live in a story about age. Age is, she didn't say this, but I'm saying age can be irrelevant.
Age,
you know, if I am aware and I feel like I am, of that story just pounding me.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. And you see the fifth there, you know, that story just pounding you, you know. And as the guy had said, age
can
be irrelevant.
Can be irrelevant.
Yes.
And I'm seeing the other, I was looking at this part of it this morning. You know, it'll help if I tell you a couple of thoughts. One is writing. And the other is painting.
Two creative activities, writing and painting, are two of the joys.
And so another part of the story that just triggers is relative to being this age. you're not really going to get anything out of it. One of my favorite authors is Natalie Goldberg, who's written books about writing. I think we all know this. And I'm rereading one of those books, and she talks about, you know, she's also a Zen student for many, many years, and she talks about how her writing, and I don't remember her exact term, but kind of cracked open conditioned mind and took its limiting power away from, you know, away from it. And it seems that doing writing practice in the way she describes, what I want is that. I don't care what I like. I don't care about being a writer. I care about cracking open conditioned mind.
You care about cracking open conditioned mind. It's not about, because that voice will tell you it's too late to have a good outcome.
Yeah.
You know. And that's not what's driving the desire to write, the desire to paint. It's to crack open conditioned mind.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, but simply to get out of the conversation.
Simply to get out of the conversation.
Yeah. To direct attention. Mm-hmm. And it's fighting. It's fighting as if I'm going, you know, as we often say, to take a killing puppy.
And as you talked about it this morning, I mean, really, we can see why it might be fighting. You know, but
yeah. And so I think that teaching, really, one of the crucial teachings, to keep right in the front of awareness and to do a lot of recording about, so there will be no change in consciousness without a change in behavior. So if you want to write, write. If you want to paint, paint. I do a lot of sitting around thinking about writing.
We had a lot of discussion this morning about that process, that, you know, that thinking process. And to really know that if we want a change in consciousness, there needs to be a change in behavior. And if you want to write, write. If you want to paint, paint.
And no assessment.
No assessment.
Paint as if no one else will ever see it. And in fact, don't show it to people.
Paint, and maybe I could even say write, as if no one is ever going to look at it. In fact, don't show it to people.
So I was looking at, I don't know if this was the word used earlier, but super helpful to watch somebody have a completely different piece of content and say exactly what was going on for me. Particularly as I was looking at it, I can't remember the word. Your ego wants to get the exact word that was said, but I'll call it coping. So, which I think is the word, I can't remember. Anyway, so I'm going to give you the content because it's actually helpful for me to say it out loud as well. So, you know, Andrew has cancer. And every time I go to the doctor, it's worse news. And so I have this way that I cope. And they're not actually bad ways to cope. That's what I was looking at as people were talking. You know, they're like, some of them are kind of good ways to cope. Things like, okay, you know, I'm going to stay right here and I'm going to do the next thing and go home and do the dishes. And I noticed simultaneously, like, my body starts to pull in like this, pull really tight. And there's somebody down deep, as I was looking, as the person was looking, what about me? You know, I'm sad. You know, there's like, but my coping things are things that historically would be coping. Don't feel, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, so good things are used to keep me from caring for all parts of me.
Yeah. In this really challenging situation, and you see that these coping mechanisms are kind of getting put over the top of maybe some authentic need that's there, and they seem like such good things, you know, to use practice tools.
I think that's the tricky part.
But yet you can hear. There is, you know, what about me? I'm sad. And, yeah.
Yeah, and I was looking at a minute ago that what's so helpful about Sangha is that it was simply in the looking at the process, and that arose.
Yeah.
So ego would take that and say, oh, I should go looking for the person who feels sad. Which, again, isn't looking. Because it leads to me, so it jumps up to here to try to, let's see if I can say that. Okay, so that arises, right, as somebody else is looking. I'm like, oh, there's something down deeper there, too, that needs care. And that was discovered because I was paying attention to every process simultaneously with the person sharing, you know, inside.
Yeah.
And that, that's what's called for. Yes. So what I, that's in quotes, believes is called for is to jump up and get in some kind of story. And, you know, ego is always making, it'll make a story about this. Always trying to stay a step ahead, making a story. It does have that element of urgency to it. Like, if I don't believe what it's saying, you know, somebody's going to die in this case, really. You know, I've got to go up here and analyze this. I think the key is to keep that process of looking, of just looking. I don't know. Oh, and then this. So I'll do it right now. So here's what happens. So the thing I look at, so I was sitting. No, I better start. I just got confused. So, got this information on Tuesday. Thought we were going to do this one thing. We thought that was the only doorway. And so, there was actually kind of a piece with it. Like, the mind couldn't get too many stories going. Then we get a call from, so there's these two big doctors at this big place who disagree about the way forward. And then there's another one, you know, there's lots of doctors. Then there's another one that may be as close to the middle way as is possible in that environment. This is fascinating to watch. My mind and theirs, and it kind of go on. Anyway, so there's this thing. There's this thing that goes on with seeing the way forward. Mm-hmm. And these people are really, I project, who knows if this is real, going up to here and using information to figure something out, mm-hmm. which happens here, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a very different thing to access sort of academic information and studies, because they do a lot of quoting studies on both sides. Mm-hmm. So at one point I said something like, what if he's not an experiment? Mm-hmm. You could tell she was a little caught off guard. And it made her think. But anyway, so it seems like, so then what I noticed I'd done since those, all those days until Saturday morning, so that's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all the energy gets pulled in and I'm going to survive. Yeah. Not consciously, of course. Yeah. Then there's judgment on that. So in that way that, like, coping is judged, that's why that rope thing also made me feel better, because there's a way in which this system does what it does. Mm-hmm. And if that were in the realm of compassion, then it would all be fine. Yeah. Yeah. But of course, this judgment thing comes in and starts saying all these things, you know, of course, all these things. Well, you should talk to this person, or you should just breathe. Or, you know, it uses every single coping thing that I'm doing and starts to criticize it. Which then, of course, paralyzes me.
Yeah, so just to make sure I stay with you here, there's a lot that you said that was valuable. You started out by saying that the process you saw in group this morning, how valuable that was, and you're applying it to this particular content. But I think you described what you saw as that place of presence, and just, you know, instead of going up here, trying to get things figured out, with all of this, you know, whether it may be book learning from the doctors, but, you know, instead of just having an experience this morning of hearing another person speak and go, oh, I didn't think about this, I didn't noodle my way here, but suddenly I'm aware of a need, an authentic need that I wasn't aware of previously. And it didn't require me going up here and using a coping mechanism or using a tool to get there.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah. The practice, good. I guess that's where recording and listening comes in.
And recording,
which was suggested. I had a guidance appointment. And that person also reflected what they sort of saw this person, you know, mm-hmm. and how helpful recording and listening can be, because there's a stepping back and seeing what this poor person is going through.
Yeah, there's just a stepping back with the recording and listening. Are you referring to the two-handed recording?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, can just really, really let her talk. And then just step back and hear what she has to say.
Because it seems like what happened this morning was that stepping back happened. Like, there was a lot of compassion as the person was talking, as they were describing. Oh, I don't know if that's what they said. I got a lot of anxiety, and then I noticed this, and then I noticed, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's me. You know, that's what, mm-hmm. and there was just a lot of compassion for seeing
uh-huh.
that goes on.
Yeah.
And when I'm not seeing that, there's a lot of desperation.
Yeah, when there's not that stepping back and having, holding it in compassion, then it starts to be a lot of desperation. And when it's wrong, or, you know.
Yeah, it's all that judgment, man.
All that judgment.
Okay, it's just horrible. It's a horrible thing. You know, I'm more committed than ever to go up against that.
Wow.
Okay, because, you know, it's bad enough right now.
It's bad enough.
To have that piled on, it's just evil.
It is so evil to have a person going through, you know, a really, really hard time, and then to have this additional stuff piled on.
Yeah, it's just astounding, too. to us, but I'm so glad we're all in it together. You know, I just feel so much less alone. Mm-hmm. You know, just like, regardless of content, we're all so committed to.
Yeah.
You know, that place of compassion and awareness, I guess. You know, just. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if I come here stuck and just listen, mm-hmm. we're all the same. So.
If you come here stuck, you can listen, and wow, we just realize that we all are in it. We're all the same. We all go through a similar process.
And I would say we carry each other.
And we carry
each other. Or I feel carried, you know, when I come down and just listen. Oh, yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, I
feel
carried.
Yeah.
Them. Yeah, really.
Thank you very much.
That sounded really great. I've been working on a process kind of over an extended period of time, and there have been little kind of stages of progress through the process of seeing things. So the process, you've heard me in this room talk about it, is I can't, you must. That's the duality that gets going in this process.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. And then there's this feeling of, visceral feeling of I can't. And then there's also a very strong realization that I'm hearing you must.
Mm-hmm.
So there it doesn't, you know, it's just like being kind of torn apart in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talked about it one night in group and got some insight that, of course she can't. She believes she can't, so she's not the one to be trying to do this thing that she believes and feels viscerally that she can't do. And it was suggested that she's really young. And so, but there is somebody who can do it. And so I started working with both of those energies that were showing up in the process map. And what I was doing was following a series of things about process mapping, and I was in the part of working with finding what the person who is suffering in this process map would need to not suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did was I was focusing on the person who feels so strongly that she can't and that she's being told she must. It just seemed really painful. You know, to be in that, and to have the guidance that this is a really young person, and that just seemed cruel, actually, to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing a lot of different activities to connect with that energy and to see what I could do to alleviate that suffering. And it just didn't seem to be, I couldn't seem to connect with that energy that was there. And I tried a lot of different ways and did a lot of things that seemed like I was trying to be really, really there for that energy that was feeling that, so that she wouldn't feel like she needed to continue to try to do it. So then that sort of directed my attention to the one, the energy that seemed to be there, that in the very much in the background, when I got the guidance, I realized there's that, the one, the guidance said, there's somebody who can do it. And so I started thinking, what I'm doing is focusing all the energy on the problem, If there's somebody here that can do it, I imagine she's suffering too, because she's not allowed to do it. Mm-hmm. This energy is like the poor pathetic energy who can't. Mm-hmm. And poor thing is being asked when she's just a little girl to do it. You know, that's where my sympathy was sort of directed. And so it just sort of like what various people have talked about, this awareness coming in or insight coming in, that, wait a minute, here's another person who's suffering, and she wants to do it, I think. She wants to do it, but she keeps being told, she keeps hearing, I can't, you must. And it's just, you know, it's like, so, that felt like it flipped the process into, ideas started coming, well, we could do this, and we could plan this, and we could, and it was the first time that any kind of real energy started to flow in to this process that I was kind of laboring over, you know, trying to find the key to alleviate the suffering, and so that something different could happen, because it's not been fun being in this place that's very much like stuck, really stuck.
So you've been in this really stuck process of I can't do it, you have to do it. And spending time with the process map around it, and feeling kind of, it sounds like, stuck with the process map too, you know, just like, you know, seeing that there's this suffering with this, you know, this orientation of I can't.
Yeah.
And then getting the insight that, through guidance, you know, that there's also someone that can. Mm-hmm. And what about shifting the attention to the one that can?
Yeah, because all the attention is sort of going to what seems like a problem, which, you know, we know problems are only in conditioning. Mm-hmm. There's no problems when we're not having our attention on conditioning. So I don't think I want to keep trying to have my attention on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, that thing about it being young, maybe it's kind of a story. Mm-hmm. Or maybe conditioning has usurped somebody young and is, you know, making a puppet out of that. I don't know. But that was a good way to go.
And there seems like there's some similarities in what Susan's talking about too, in that, you know, there's this, like, it seems like a good thing. You know, I'm working on the process map, I'm trying hard, you know, and yet it's the good person thing to do. Yeah. And in the meantime, the attention's getting diverted from the real possibility to end suffering and looking at what could.
Right, and when my attention went from the problem to saying, well, what about the person who can, you know, giving some attention there, some energy started flowing into the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so that led me to feel like that's what was happening. I was attending to what was being seen as a problem.
You're attending to the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that here's somebody in the background going, I got a few ideas how this might work. Uh-huh. But,
and you mentioned too that's a cause for suffering right there too. There's this person, a competent person that has some ideas and wants to have her say and not being allowed. And so, to end the suffering by turning and allowing that.
Mm-hmm.
Those ideas to get expressed.
Mm-hmm. So, it became then at that point, all right, how are we going to, you know, let's let her loose. let her see what she, if she can.
Mm-hmm.
let's let her loose, mm-hmm. and sort of see how that affects this process, mm-hmm. which already it has, because it feels less stuck.
It feels less stuck, and I'm saying, and again, you know, June was talking about, you know, that can't be a change in behavior. It can't be a change in consciousness without a change in behavior.
Yeah.
And that's allowing that change in behavior to,
Since this has happened, since I had the experience of this being a new direction that would be helpful, maybe, I'm seeing, ego's ramping up.
Of course. Yeah.
It's gotta get this knot going. Yeah. We had her focused in that corner, so
right.
Let's get her attention back somewhere like that. Yeah, so that's be the next thing I'm going to have to fill in on the process mapping, how it's the next move it's going to make, because I think there's been a change in the movement, there's been some movement, let's say that's changed.
And it may be a good thing to report as well, just to have the awareness of what, see what attack. You're becoming aware of the attack moves, and you know the counterattack.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you, Cameron. Sure.
Well, this morning I've seen language that goes with something that I've been looking at a lot,
mm-hmm.
and it's small to big.
Small to big.
That's what we're all doing all the time. That's a really simple language for what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So the conditioning gets us into this really small place, which is a conversation in conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really small.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the whole world goes away, and we're just focused on this little tiny thing. And then what everybody this morning has described is going to a big place.
Uh-huh.
So however that happened,
uh-huh.
it's leaving attention, getting attention off of that really small place and into something big, and then the problems are solved and the insight is there and the excitement is there and the enthusiasm, and then what conditioning is fighting so hard, what ego is fighting so hard for, is to get back into a small place.
Yes.
And one of the things that I was so fascinated about with what Susan said, I'm a big fan of this kind of boogum boogum guy, whose name I can't remember, because I call him Daniel David, because I couldn't remember whether it was Daniel or David, so I just named him Daniel David. Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
And so he lays out different levels of consciousness, and he does an emotional component and he does a number component,
mm-hmm.
and he talks about really intelligent people, a la specialists in the medical field, who get to this number of 499,
mm-hmm.
and it's as smart as you can get,
mm-hmm.
but there's no wisdom.
Wow.
Which is what was just pointed at. You know, it's like all of this, these facts and figures and statistics, and they're just incredibly brilliant in this really small, focused way. I don't mean that to be critical of anybody, because, God love them. But it's getting to that place of realizing, but it can only take you so far. Because as brilliant as it is, it's still focused in a really small wave.
Yes.
And so I just loved hearing it this morning, because it, to me, small and big is so much more manageable than conditioned mind and whole mind,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
ego and
mm-hmm.
God, or however we want to talk about the big that contains the little.
Yeah. So that small to big is just so much more
manageable. Yeah, because with every, you know, it's small. Focus on a problem. Small. Focus on a an obsessive conversation. Small. Focus on a, you can't, you're too old. Small. Yeah. Focus on, I hate that rope. Whatever it is, and then everybody described, then stepping back into big.
And I think you said, too, that, you know, who knows? I mean, there's that element of, what was it that everybody in this room was able to step from that place small to big?
Yes.
If,
and I, the small to big fascinated me, because if we, if we're experiencing the process but we don't see it as a process, it can seem very mysterious. So it's like, what is the, so then I, that happened there, but then over there, that happened, and I, and what I'm not seeing is, yeah, but all I did was go to big.
Being caught up in the content and not seeing how everything fits together, just, you know, not seeing, oh, I just went from small to big as a process.
Yes.
Not.
Which is where the, I think the genius of recording and listening is for us. Because it's exactly what Susan was describing in listening. So in recording and listening, do the same process. We do the same, lose interest in the small in me. I'm no longer in the small in me, and that's creating that opening, because the big is now available. So whether it's somebody else talking and I'm following along with them, and that disidentifies me, or I'm talking into the recorder, or and that disidentifies me, or I'm listening and that disidentifies me. In all those cases, I have slipped into big.
And reaching for that recorder, that begins the slippage.
Slippage into big.
Slippage into big, you know, and then coming to group and being present to what other people are saying and follow their process.
Everyone is a pathway to big.
Everyone is a pathway to big.
That's a t-shirt.
There's a book title.
That was the point. I mean, it was about content, but you know that you can have all the credentials in the world and be on the, what, the $4.99?
$4.99, you're as smart as a human being can be.
Human being can still be in that small process.
Yes, which, just one of those fun things to consider, is what Einstein was up against. He was dealing with 499ers, and they could not figure out what he was doing, and he couldn't explain it. Because he had slipped over into, he's operating the six or seven hundred. And so here are all these geniuses, but they couldn't step over into the whole mind from which he was seeing how all of this worked.
Talk about the suffering to be a genius and not, and to not,
and not get it.
Not get it.
So thanks be to Sangha, huh?
Thanks be to Sangha. Thank you.
Just super quickly, I know we're almost out of time, but just everything has been exquisitely helpful this morning, and it's just amazing how it all just ties together, but just, that was so helpful, because I heard myself say on a recording last night, it just came out of nowhere, that what it felt like is not even that I'm looking at her, but that's what's happening to me, is I'm being invited to go from small L to big L love, and that I'm just looking at how all of these experiences where it seems like karma is triggered, like, oh, you know, whatever, that feel painful or... That really those are, it's like some of them were in the content of like loss or, you know, like a love that I don't have or can't, whatever. And I was looking at, I heard a, listened to a book a while back that depicted basically a very intense love between these two people and how essentially they gave it up. They gave up the small L love between the two of them. for love with a capital L. Mm-hmm. And I've just been looking so much at how it feels like that's the invitation of all of these, all the way from the first conversation today, where these places that feel so, quote, painful and so difficult, there are these invitations to that capital L. Uh-huh. And if I can, I'm right with the, wow, sitting still for an entire day. We got to sit yesterday. Such a huge gift. And it feels like it's the how of, same with the recording, listening, it's the how of being able to cultivate that stillness to move through that small L to the big L.
Mm-hmm. 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 Cultivating that stillness to move through from the small L to the big L. Mm-hmm. And the point that you make that, you know, maybe those, that discomfort, that, you know, that painful place is that invitation to move to the big L.
Yeah.
You know?
And can we stay there?
And can we stay there?
I mean, I won't go on and on, but everything everyone said, because I've been looking at the coping, too, and how what we're trained to do in the coping is we have to go to sleep there. Because if we don't go to sleep there, and we're conscious, completely conscious of the coping, then what happens in my experience is we see everything that's happening there. Mm-hmm. And in that stillness, in that seeing, we want to move. We just are moved to the big place, like we just described. We're moved from small to big. It's only the making us go unconscious in the coping that then leads to the feeling worse, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Which goes right back up into the battering cycle. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that keeps it going. But if we can stay present, that place where we're not supposed to stay present there, but if we can stay present there, just that courage to, it's not wrong, it's not bad, it's what is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not wrong, it's not bad, it's what it is, and just that courage to stay present, you know, when the tendency might be in the coping situation to, you know, I'm coping, you know, to go to sleep, but the courage to just stay there and watch.
And the trust that will open it up, I don't have to do it, right? Yeah. That was the other thing, that thing of...
Yeah.
God, there was an exquisite piece quote recently about listening that was, you know, basically really listening to someone that was talking about and giving up everything about having no idea that anything I have to say, I think, I could add to this, I have a better, bigger example, I have a... All of that go, knowing with every fiber of your being that there's... I can't remember how it said it, but basically this is it. And I was thinking of that ropes thing, that's the listening we can do with our own lives, like with life, that I don't have, I have nothing better to add here, right, to what life is offering through me.
Nothing better to add here, and that beautiful piece quote, that we can do that with our own lives, be so present to our own lives without letting the ego have, well, I have a better idea, I have to put my 2 cents in, but to just be present to that life. Mm-hmm. And that's where the miracle happens. Thank you.